This is Being Catholic with Bob Johnston on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5.
Hi, this is Bob Johnston, and you're listening to Being Catholic right here on Catholic Spirit Radio. We're going to talk a little bit today about a pro-family policy that could be instituted after Roe is defeated, if it is, and we hope it is. We talked about that last week. We talked about Roe and the fact that it is very, very likely, probably more likely than not, that Roe will be overturned by the Supreme Court because of the way it's being presented to the court. It's almost sort of impossible for them to fudge on it in any way. It's really not open to some kind of restriction over a period of time, little by little. And it's certainly not open to them somehow or another approving it, especially with the majority of the court announcing their particular idea of interpreting the Constitution. So we talked about that last week. It's likely to be overthrown. So we're going to talk this week about what the pro-life movement can do after Roe. The pro-life movement has had to be mostly on the defensive, and the pro-life movement has been mostly having to say no to abortion and not much time to say yes to a lot of other things. So we're going to talk about some of the things that can be done to help families and children if Roe is defeated, and we'll talk about that. I'm going to start first with the radical wrongness of Roe. I want to get a little bit more on that, and then we'll come into the factor of its defeat, hopefully, that it will be defeated. And we'll talk about some of the things that can be done. So that's what we're going to talk about today. If you would like to talk with us or call into the station for anything, remember our number is 309-829-2427. And we're right here on Catholic Spirit Radio, 89.5 FM and 92.5 FM in good old McLean County in Bloomington Normal. We're also at 88.3 FM in Pontiac and 97.1 FM in Lincoln. So we're covering much of central Illinois. Remember that we're brought to you by you. You bring us to you, and we couldn't do it without you. So we do need your donations. Anything that you can give would be appreciated. And you can do that by calling the station, again, 309-829-2427. And you can also, and the best way would be to go online to CatholicSpiritRadio.com, which is our website, and it'll tell you there how to make a donation. It will also tell you quite a bit about us. And we do have a monthly bulletin board that comes out. I want to remind everybody that you can, if you have something important that's going on in the Catholic world and you'd like to get that out, some publicity on it, don't forget we're here. Call the station or go to our website, and we'll try to get your announcement on the show and perhaps even maybe during the week if we can. So don't forget to do that. And my wife here, Lynn, is with me. We're going to have a great show for you today, and she has a few things to say about some pro-life things going on, so I'll turn that over to her.
Hello. This is October already. Can you believe time's gone by so fast? I, for one, love the fall weather. I hope you do, too. The leaves are turning. It's just a more comfortable time of the year. It's drier than it is in the spring. But October is the month of the rosary, and there's going to be a rosary rally sponsored by America Needs Fatima on the 16th. Was it the 16th?
The 16th of October. That's on a Saturday. It'll be a couple of weeks from today, I think.
Yeah. At 11:45 at Trinity Church. It'll be on the corner of Chestnut and Center. Try to get there. This will be a public rosary. People will say the rosary and a few prayers afterwards to encourage those going by to show them we do take a stand for life. And it we need to publicize that more. So do that. Say your rosary every day. You don't want you get in the habit of it. It becomes easier. Sometimes when you're really out of the habit of saying the rosary daily, it's hard to get back to it. But stick with it. It's worth it. There are a lot of sites online that you can follow the rosary with, and you can do a spiritual rosary online too. So pick up one of those apps on your cell phone. Okay, Bob.
Okay, we're going to talk a little bit about the radical wrongness of Roe, and then we'll talk about the change that the pro-life movement can have in promoting family policy after Roe, if it is defeated, and hopefully it will be. We talked last week, read some articles from First Things magazine, the October issue, and that's what I'm going to use again today. And in that issue, there was a couple of articles in there that said that Roe, in their opinion, you know, Roe will be defeated. And these are pretty prominent people that we were quoting in law and knowledge about the Supreme Court, and they're very confident that it will be defeated. But nevertheless, I think we need to really stress the radical wrongness of Roe, and if it's defeated, what we must do to climb back out of the hole we were in, and the things that the pro-life movement can do to be positive, things that they can say yes to. So that's what we're going to get into. And I want to read from The Radical Wrongness of Roe by Michael Stokes Paulson. And Michael Stokes Paulson is Distinguished University Chair and Professor of Law at the University of St. Thomas. So he's knowledgeable in the law, and he goes over here, and this is a symposium in the October issue of First Things on the various aspects of Roe. And he talks about how we have to view it, how wrong it is. And he says, in Roe versus Wade, the Supreme Court created a constitutional right of some human beings to kill other human beings. Specifically, the court held that the Constitution of the United States creates a substantive individual liberty to procure or perform an abortion of a human life. That is, to terminate a woman's pregnancy by killing the living human embryo or fetus gestating in her womb. The court located this right to kill the human fetus implausibly in the 14th Amendment's guarantee that persons not be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. And so it is really rich to think that the Supreme Court came to a conclusion that you can take a human life because there is a clause in the Constitution says that a person shall not be deprived of life or liberty or property without due process of law. And, of course, they applied this to the woman, but they certainly didn't, and they applied it to the abortionist, but they certainly didn't apply it to the human being that has the greatest interest in it, and that is the unborn baby gestating in the mother's womb, as if somehow they are not persons or people or humans, and they have no rights that anybody is bound to respect. So that's how horrible Roe is.
Yes, and what it's done to people since. It used to be when a mother became pregnant and announced it, and there was joy in the family. Today, it's quite the opposite in most cases, in many cases.
Exactly. This is what we have, a lot of what we have going in our society today that is negative is a direct result of Roe, the declining into a sort of an absolute autonomous individuality, a sort of meanness toward anything or anybody that disagrees with anything that a person wants to do, and so on. And it's breeding a class of people, or young people coming up, that will not have the care and respect for other people as they once did, and an understanding that everything is not open to them, and there are other people with other rights that have to be taken into consideration. So it goes on here. It says, it is important to be clear-eyed about one fact. Abortion kills a living human being. There is no doubt about that. It is simply reality of human biology. Abortion kills a living being, and that living being is a human living being, an organism with a biological identity and life separate from that of his or her mother. The act of abortion ends a distinct human life. The unborn child is not part of the mother's body. He or she, the unborn child, is not an it, but an embryonic boy or girl with an identifiable sex. And it is an independent life, living within and dependent on the mother's body. Nor does the fact of bodily dependence alter the fact that the fetus is a separate human life, and that abortion ends that separate life. It merely means that the human being killed by abortion is killed at an early stage in its life cycle. Roe created a license to kill, and kill we have since Roe fashioned a constitutional right to abortion in 1973. There have been approximately 62 million abortions in America since then, a death toll that dwarfs the Nazi Holocaust and exceeds the total loss of American lives in all of our wars combined by a factor of about 40. That's how horrible Roe is. And if people should look back in our history, when we found out that Nazis under Hitler in the persecution of the Jews were actually throwing Jewish babies into the furnaces, or forcing Jews themselves to do this, into furnaces and burning them up, we were sickened and horrified about something like that going on, and did everything in our power to stop it. And when we realized that there was a greater effort by everyone to win the war, that it was, in other words, it was why, it showed very much why we are fighting. And yet, 80 years later, we're doing the same thing. Less than 80 years later, by 1973, it was, you know, not that long after World War II, from 45 to 73. So it's less than 30 years. And we were doing, through abortion, in effect, the same things that the Nazis were doing to the Jews. So this is how wrong Roe is. Roe is the most extreme and outrageous decision in the Supreme Court's history. Chief Justice Roger Taney's majority opinion in Dred Scott versus Sanford in 1857 went out of its way to make as many pro-slavery rulings as possible. It purported to deny African Americans any legal rights or human moral worth. It created a substantive due process constitutional right to race slavery in formerly free federal territories, and it wrapped its holding in the most racist rhetoric imaginable. But Roe is fully as bad as Dred Scott in its legal reasoning, for which Dred Scott's substantive due process gibberish was the leading precedent. And Roe is worse in its consequences. A right to kill is even worse than a right to enslave, as a fire is worse than a frying pan. So that's, again, you know, we should keep this in mind and remind people and remind the Supreme Court, this is what is at stake. What kind of a country are we going to be? Racial segregation, the Japanese internment, sterilization of the disabled, blatant and explicit discrimination against women in professional opportunities. These are all bad things and were wrongly embraced at points in the Supreme Court's supremely checkered past. And they have been changed since that time because we know that they were wrong. And the author goes on, he said, I would be the last to deny the outrageousness of those decisions, but none approaches the enormity of Roe. So this is something, again, that you have to take into consideration by comparing it. Those wrong things in the past, at least, were not things that were directly killing people. And there were, you know, they could be corrected. Roe, for the people that have been suffered from it, there is no correction. The only thing worse than Roe was its knowing and deliberate reaffirmation in Planned Parenthood versus Casey, 1992, on the false and transparent pretext that stare decisis requires the court, sometimes, to adhere to precedents radically at odds with the Constitution. If that were true, all of the above, segregation, discrimination, internment, involuntary sterilization, would still be the law of the land. Can you imagine that, saying that you couldn't overturn slavery because the Constitution held it to be legal for too long, and that was a precedent that couldn't be overturned, or that segregation couldn't be overturned because that was a precedent too long? All of these things would still be in effect if something couldn't be overturned because of precedent. And that's what stare decisis is, that somehow precedent, no matter how wrong or how horrible, sets something in cement so that it can't be changed, even if it's totally unjust. So if the Supreme Court tried to move to that in this particular case, it's going to look extremely bad for them. Roe is radically wrong. It is radically wrong in its constitutional interpretation, an utterly lawless act of judicial invention. It is an extremist decision in terms of the extent of abortion right. It's so lawlessly fashioned, and it is extreme and demoralizing in its human consequences. Begin with what Roe held. On the way to its recognition of a constitutional right to kill, there were three key rulings. First, that the unborn child had no legal rights or moral status whatsoever. Second, that the Constitution affirmatively bestowed upon pregnant women and abortionists a presumptive legal entitlement to abort the unborn. And third, that this presumed right prevailed over essentially any other competing consideration. I mean, Roe became so absolute that the decisions on it were absolutely just astonishing. At any rate, we're going to stop here and take a break and come back and finish this wrongness of Roe, and then we'll talk about the family policy that the pro-life can pursue if Roe is overturned. So stay with us. We'll be right back.
You've been listening to Being Catholic with Bob Johnston on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5.
Join in this special rosary event, America Needs Fatima, Public Square Rosary. This annual event will be held on Saturday, October 16th at 11:45 a.m. Over 20,000 prayer rallies will be happening across the country. Bring your family and friends of all ages. The location is across from Holy Trinity Church in Bloomington at the corner of Center and Chestnut. For details, check out anf.org or call Sandy at 309-662-1717.
Hi, this is Bob Johnston. You're listening to Being Catholic right here on Catholic Spirit Radio, and we're talking about the wrongness, the horrible wrongness of Roe, and we are also going to talk about what the pro-life movement can do after Roe is overturned, and we're certainly praying and hoping that it will be overturned, and the chances are very, very good that it will be overturned, so we're addressing those issues. And we were talking about the three key rulings in Roe, and we're going to go ahead and talk a little bit about those and what they are and finish the wrongness of Roe, and then we'll get into what the pro-life movement can positively do concerning strengthening and helping families after Roe. So talking about the three key rulings, first, Roe holds that the human fetus has no constitutional legal status as a person and that no rights that anyone else need respect. In this way, among others, Roe eerily parallels Dred Scott, which held that black persons had no rights that anyone need respect and could therefore justly be enslaved for their own benefit. So that's exactly what Roger Taney, who was the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court at that time, what Roger Taney ruled, and he used that phrase, that black people have no rights that anyone is bound to respect. And that's exactly what's being applied to unborn babies. Roe's second holding is unequivocally and unambiguously wrong, that the 14th Amendment's guarantee of due process of law before the state deprives someone of life, liberty, or property. The same language claimed by Dred Scott to support a federal constitutional right to slave ownership. It embraces a right to privacy that includes a right to abortion. Put to one side the logical incoherence and question-begging nature of such a privacy formulation, which assumes that there is no third party involved in an abortion, just the woman and the abortionist. This second holding of Roe has no basis in the text, structure, or history of the Constitution. So it's important to understand that. And the fact is that it's just absolutely, if a unborn baby could suddenly be reasonable and have an adult understanding, imagine the whole idea of being killed, cut up, burned up by a salt solution or anything like that under the pretense of protecting life, liberty, and property. That's how absolutely convoluted that Roe is. Third, and finally, Roe held that this right to abortion prevailed over essentially any and all countervailing considerations. It is important to understand just how extreme Roe is in this regard. Under Roe and under Planned Parenthood versus Casey, which carried Roe's results forward with minor revisions, the right to abortion may be exercised for essentially any reason, including social convenience, economic concerns, sex selection, or even just spite. And the right is super protected against all other interests at all stages of pregnancy, right up to the appointment, including the point of birth, and in many cases, even in effect after the point of birth, if the abortion doesn't take place properly during or prior to birth and the baby is born alive, it is now no longer protected and can be left to die, simply to die of exposure and dehydration.
Some people don't believe that, but it does happen.
Right, dehydration and starvation. This is an insane policy. And when confronted with this, what's even worse is that because of this super protection of a woman's right to an abortion, people are being convinced, and women are being convinced, that it doesn't make any difference even if it's infanticide, that they understand that and they're going to be proud and hold abortion somehow as a woman's right anyway. That's the kind of thing it does to a society, and eventually it eats away at the moral underpinnings of society and is a huge contribution to the dissolution of that society. And we can see in this and many other things in our society today that our culture is dissolving and our whole idea of law and order is beginning to fall apart.
That's true. We watch the news closely enough and very weird outlets of news and see what's going on. It's the police no longer have to police anybody. You can go, people are going into the big stores in Manhattan, in the jewelry shops and everything, just taking what the thieves take, whatever they want, and leave. Nobody does a thing about it but watch.
Exactly.
Where do you think that goes back to? The respect, disrespect for life.
Exactly. You know,
in possession.
The convolutions of our culture, the dismantling of our culture, all of these convoluted things contribute to the dissolution of our culture, but Roe is a huge and major contributor to it. A lot of things flow from it and would not exist without it.
Right.
So it's important to get this under control. It goes on here, it says, after viability, states in theory can restrict abortions, but in practice they cannot. And before I go on, did you want to say something else, Linda, you wanted to get in today?
I just never have understood how a right to privacy has anything to do with killing babies. It's just illogical.
It doesn't. The Supreme Court at that time was searching for a reason to be able to make abortion available. And actually, you know, the people back at that time, many people in the Supreme Court itself, believed that somehow or another, Roe, you know, that abortion was being compassionate to women. It was sort of out of compassion for the suffering situations that women found themselves in sometimes when they were pregnant. But in focusing only on the woman and the woman's concerns, instead of acting in some way to help relieve this and maybe prevent a lot of these things from happening, instead, it just ignored and forgot all about the unborn baby and decided that it would be compassionate toward women. And this is what caused Roe to come about in the first place. And, of course, no matter how good the reasons for approving of something, if those reasons are inapplicable and don't really apply and don't take into consideration other important factors, they're just as damaging being so good reasons or so-called compassionate reasons as if they were hateful reasons or uncompassionate reasons. It doesn't make any difference. The result is the same. So,
if you don't have a respect for life, you don't have a respect for law, you don't have a respect for government, police, anything else, you have no respect left. How can you respect yourself when you kill somebody? You can't.
Exactly. And as I pointed out, or as this article points out, rather, that technically they can restrict abortions, but in practice they cannot, because abortion still must be allowed for any health reason, with health being defined strangely as including any emotional, psychological, familiar, or age considerations agreed upon by the woman and the abortionist as a sufficient reason for abortion. So in effect, there's simply no way to define compassion with this kind of a ruling in any way that would prevent an abortion. So the idea that the states can technically restrict abortion has been overturned by this ruling. And this ruling came about in a case called Doe versus Bolton. And that case set forth these health criteria, and Roe incorporated them by reference. This loophole is big enough to drive a truck through. It includes practically any reason for abortion that one could think of, including eugenic reasons of sex selection or disability extermination. And we have a lot of those going on today. The result is abortion on demand throughout pregnancy. And when you have these kinds of rulings, they can lead to further rulings. They can lead to the idea that infanticide is permissible because of the inconvenience of children to a woman or family. And then after that, why not discrimination against people who have handicaps and health problems? And finally, why not euthanasia for those people and euthanasia for older people maybe who can no longer contribute to society? Roe points down in this direction, and it needs to be stopped before it does far more damage than the people in favor of it ever imagine, and can do tremendous amount of damage to them as well. And they're not thinking in the longer terms. They're just thinking in short terms of perhaps tough cases where a woman has a a very, very hard time because of pregnancy. But the fact is the people that push it are mostly people who are not in those situations and who usually are in an income bracket in which those situations aren't going to occur. And that's a strange thing, too, that's going on. It isn't the people who suffer from it the most that are actually pushing it. It's a...
No, it's a convenience thing. And you know what? It doesn't even involve the father, his rights. He has none. If you read this through like it is.
Exactly.
It's up to the woman if she wants to do this as part, supposedly part of her body. Is it really?
No, it's not. And the fact is that when a baby is produced by, in effect, two people, the father and the mother, both of these people should have representation. So it's doubly, absolutely ironic that you can use the 14th Amendment, which provides for protection of life, liberty, and property without due process of law, to justify Roe when you're actually depriving that particular amendment from the fathers that don't want an abortion, and also from the baby who is the victim of abortion. So it goes on here. It says, one can get lost in the weeds of Roe's legal and policy radicalism and forget the most important point. That point is not that the decision is legally indefensible, outrageous, doctrinally offensive, and a betrayal by the court of its constitutional duty, though all this is true. And it is not that the decision legislates a truly extreme pro-abortion legal regime, though that is true too. The most important point is that this lawless extremist decision has truly monstrous moral consequences, the creation of a constitutional right to kill and the massacre that has ensued from that. Extremism has consequences. The wages of Roe's extraordinary infidelity to the Constitution, and I'll say it again, infidelity to the Constitution. It wasn't only non-constitutional, it was anti-constitutional, what our government is based on. So at any point, the wages of Roe's extraordinary infidelity to the Constitution is death on a massive scale. And in Catholicism, of course, Scripture says that the wages of sin is death, and this sin has resulted in a horrendous number of deaths. And it's a precedent, again, for worse things to come. So it needs to be gotten rid of. So at any rate...
We're now seeing the results of this. It hasn't taken all that long. Look around you. Things that are going on now go right back to this disrespect for the human life.
Exactly. So we will take up family policy after Roe. And some of the things that can be done after Roe, we're assuming that it will be overturned. I mean, we could be wrong. I'm not trying to say that we're somehow or another can predict what the Supreme Court will do, as in the last week's talk, we talked about the lawyer who was talking about and giving his reasons why he was certain that Roe would be overturned. Nevertheless, he did say that, you know, he didn't know this directly from anybody on the Supreme Court, although he knew all the members of the Supreme Court to speak to. Nevertheless, he said that they certainly would never tell him what their decision was going to be, and he has no inside channel to what that decision would be, but he's just saying if these people follow the principle that they've laid down for constitutional interpretation, then they will have to arrive at and conclude that Roe needs to be overturned. So,
well, let's just pray and hope, because we all have seen the folly of man acted out in the Supreme Court, too.
Exactly. Again, I'll remind that, as the article just said, we're going to get into the family here in the next segment. But I want to remind again, you know, as the article just said, that these precedents have established a a huge dissolving of our whole moral situation in America and our whole idea of a morality applying to our culture. And it's beginning to dissolve our culture. And in return, it can dissolve society and dissolve government, because a society that does not have a cultural agreement on things cannot really hold together.
No, it can't.
And this radical autonomy contributes to that, this idea that the individual has to somehow be provided in every single thing that they want to do, and that everybody has to stand back and stand out of the way, because in some way it will hurt the other person, or even not do that, but just hurt their feelings, that nobody can restrict anybody else in anything. And when you have that, you have a radical autonomy that doesn't make for the possibility of having a society that agrees on anything. The people who push Roe think that they're all in agreement. But the fact is that more and more people are becoming unable to be in agreement about anything, and that includes the people that have pushed Roe in the first place. There's a lot of those people are beginning to see that all of this can backfire and go against them as well as anybody else, and to live in a culture that, you know, that it has nothing in common to keep it together is to live in a chaotic situation that invites dictatorship or authoritarian rule. And it seems as if we're moving into a soft totalitarianism already, and that soft totalitarianism can quickly turn into a hard totalitarianism. And the very people that started all these things can wish that they never did it. They will not necessarily be the ones that are on top and controlling things, and they will have no idea of where an authoritarian society might go once it gets enough power.
That's so true. Look at Germany.
Yeah.
It was those people that supported were the first to go.
Anyway, we're going to stop here and take a break, and we'll come back and talk about family policy after Roe. So stay with us. We'll be right back.
You've been listening to Being Catholic with Bob Johnston on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5.
Join in this special Rosary event. America needs Fatima, Public Square Rosary. This annual event will be held on Saturday, October 16th at 11:45 a.m. Over 20,000 prayer rallies will be happening across the country. Bring your family and friends of all ages. The location is across from Holy Trinity Church in Bloomington at the corner of Center and Chestnut. For details, check out anf.org or call Sandy at 309-662-1717.
Hi, this is Bob Johnston. We're back from our break. You're listening to Being Catholic right here on Catholic Spirit Radio. We've been talking about the horrible wrongness of Roe, and now we're going to talk a little bit about the family policy that the pro-life movement can get behind after Roe, and it's something that the pro-life movement can at last do that is a positive thing. And that is saying yes to many things instead of just saying no to abortion. So that's an important issue in that respect. The article is by Yuval Levin, and Yuval Levin is the Director of Social, Cultural, and Constitutional Studies at the American Enterprise Institute and the Editor of National Affairs. And so that's the article that he contributes to this symposium. And I'll read some excerpts from it. He says, the pro-life movement, derided at times as naive, even by some who share its goals, may be about to win a great victory for justice by having worked through and not around or against the framework of our constitutional system. its success would stand as one of the great moral achievements of our society. But the end of Roe would mark the beginning of another phase in the struggle to protect the unborn as the pro-life movement labors to ensure that every child is not only protected by law, but is also welcomed into life. This often means placing what we are against in the more inviting context of what we are for, showing how saying no to something harmful is essential in order to say yes to something needful. In America after Roe, that should mean putting the case for rejecting and restricting abortion in the context of a larger case for welcoming children and supporting families. And we might be handed a peculiar opportunity on that front by one of the more cynical arguments made by the defenders of abortion. When the fight moves to the legislative arena, we are sure to hear some version of the view that pro-lifers want to limit women's options while at the same time providing no support to children and their families. As former Representative Barney Frank of Massachusetts famously put it, back in the 1980s, the moral majority supports the legislators who oppose abortions, but also they oppose child nutrition and daycare. From their perspective, life begins at conception and ends at birth. In other words, these people are saying, Lynn, I can see the question on your face. They're saying that because the pro-life people don't care what happens to a baby after it's born, or because the pro-life people don't care about families. In other words, the pro-life people are saying no to abortion, but they're also saying no to helping families. They're also saying, no to helping children and no, to these things. And so therefore, they sort of step out of the picture once their no to Roe is their no to Roe is put in play. So it does sound insane, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
Because there are so many pro-life workers and institutions who are helping women who choose not to have an abortion, and they're helping them right now. And they're doing it on their own, and they're doing it privately, and they're doing it without relying on government funds. In fact, actually, money is being taken out of their back pockets to hand over to the government that hands it over to the abortion industry, which is, again,
all backwards, yeah.
Right, which is a terrible injustice in and of itself there. To force people who are find abortion anathema to have to pay for it and take funds and money away from the fact that they are helping children already. So this charge is sick by the people that make it, including Barney Frank back in the day when he did. This is little more than hollow sneering, of course. That's what Yuval Levin says. And it's hard to imagine how it could possibly amount to an agreement for killing children. But rather than respond to it defensively, we should call this cynical bluff and see it as an opportunity to make our society more supportive of parents and more welcoming of children. This is not because any shortage of public support could justify abortion, but because help for parents and children is a worthy public goal. Parents do the most important work of our society. Children bear the promise of our future. If better meeting their core needs could also persuade more Americans to restrict practice of abortion, that would be a win-win proposition. Because we have to remember that even if Roe is overturned, their states can still have abortion on a state level. And I think the overturning of Roe will begin to eat away at that as well. But that can still happen. So the pro-life movement has to have a yes agenda after Roe is overturned. Making the parents of an unborn child eligible for federal child tax credits, for instance, would allow expectant parents to receive $3,600 a year. In other words, we can have a tax policy that favors families. For one thing, the deduction for children is still not high enough. Families should have a much higher deduction. I mean, I'm not sure what it is anymore. What is it? Is it $6,000 per child anymore? Is that what it's finally come to? But you can't raise a child on $6,000 a year anymore. And so it would be important to have higher deductions. That's one way we could do it. Lower the income tax for people that have families. And if the other people squawk, remind them, look, it's the families that provide people who will be serving you in the future and who will be taking care of you when you're old. And these people don't need only technical skills. They also have to have a moral base that makes them concerned with helping the weak and the old in their later life. And so a person who chooses not to have children and says, why should I pay anything for a family that has children, doesn't know what he's talking about. He should pay because he lives in a society where it will be necessary for other people to take the place of aging people and help him when he's older. And so society is not some kind of group of individual atoms that exist independently from everything else. So we need to remember that. And we need to try and have a pro-help policy that does as much as possible without incorporating all kinds of extra and costly government programs that will be misused. The most important thing is to try and alter our tax policy. And there are other elements. It says another element of a pro-life policy agenda would seek to make adoption attainable for more families. The cost of adopting a child domestically vary dramatically, but can easily reach into tens of thousands of dollars. I mean, it's understandable that we need to be very, very careful in adopting our babies. You don't want to give them to families that aren't capable of raising them in a proper way. But at the same time, you don't want to have it so that only the rich people could adopt the baby. It needs to be that the ordinary middle-class American, or even lower middle-class American, the ordinary working family that are unable to have children or want more children and are unable to have more, can adopt without all these expenses. So there are ways that it could be possible to cut all these costs. And one of the ways I think that it could be done would be, of course, to get rid of the discriminatory laws that outlaw various churches, especially the Catholic Church, from having adoption agencies because their moral teaching will not allow them to adopt a baby out to a homosexual couple. And the fact is that babies need, if it's possible, a mother and a father. There are some instances when that's not possible, when a mother or father dies or goes out of. But the fact is that babies for millions of years, or if they, human beings have been around about that long, are born into societies where there is a mother and a father, and that is the best way to raise children. And if other people disagree with that and go their own way, that's one thing. But for other people out of spite, to prevent an institution from adopting out a baby into a good home just because that institution restricts that adoption so that it doesn't cover these groups. These groups don't have to act in some spiteful way that somehow or another punishes a child for not getting into a nice home because the people are angry that the adoption agency doesn't adopt and support their particular agenda of how to go about adoption. I mean, that's ridiculous. And that law should be gotten off the books. It should be struck down by the Supreme Court, these kinds of laws. So,
yeah, so when you look at the elderly and the care of the elderly, I've heard it said that we should do away with the elderly that are useless now, because they're taking up money, the money that we need to survive. Well, who put the money in the coffers in the first place? All the elderly that worked all their lives. The money was put aside for them to have when they retire. It's like thievery.
It isn't only the money either, Lynn, that they did. They built things and did things and worked in factories and institutions that have made all kinds of things available to society at large. And that is pushed on to the future by them and handed on to people that are supposed to pick up the ball after that and carry it forward, just like these people picked up the ball and carried it forward when they were young. And so and this is what abortion also cuts into and why it's so unjust. And the pro-life movement can start doing that wherever they can start having governmental programs that don't have to be the kind of negative programs that get taken over where the people who are running them are interested in only putting money into their own pockets. They can be a tax policy, for example, that makes the taxes less of a burden on people and gives them more money to raise families. It can be a better adoption policy that gives people more money to raise families. It can be the idea of schools and institutions teaching how important it is for families to raise children in a way that will make them productive and decent and moral to carry on the future. It says Congress could pursue more convoluted paths, for instance, permitting new parents to draw on future Social Security benefits, slightly reducing the benefits they will receive at retirement, allowing flexible spending account dollars to be used for wage replacement after the birth or adoption of a child. There are other things we could do. We could make leave, you know, when a person goes into the military, for example, and he gets drafted, when the draft was in existence, if a person got drafted and went into the military, his job had to be waiting for him when he got back. The employer had to provide. The same thing could be done when a woman gets pregnant, if she has a job that she can work at, and she takes the time off for pregnancy and to get the family established, that there could be a longer time of leave and that employers would be required then to cooperate with this because it's good for them and it's good for everybody. Most employers are selling products to people and those people don't come into existence unless families raise them and their workers for the future don't come into existence unless you have a culture that provides replacements and does it in such a way that these replacements are responsible, moral, and act in a cooperative way in society to make that society work. So these are all things that would contribute, and the pro-life movement needs to start emphasizing them. It says the existing array of per-child benefits also could be simplified and reinforced to offer significant and straightforward support to parents. We wouldn't be, pro-life people wouldn't be saying, let's cut all the benefits that are given by the state now to people. They could say instead, why don't we streamline that? And why don't we combine all those different state and federal benefits into one package and hand that to the states and allow the states to minister the program? And if there's any law governing it at all, we can keep the federal government out. It would its policy would be just to say each state has to have a consolidation of benefits so that they don't become in effect so repetitious that they cost society a lot of money and that eventually they become actually simply something that supports the people that run them and very little goes to the people that need them. So these kinds of reforms would be possible for the pro-life movement to pursue, and they could be done by limiting government and putting more emphasis on individual families themselves and taking a lot of the power and money away from institutions that simply are in existence to perpetuate themselves and make as much as that they can for them for their own benefit.
What about making it easier for mothers to stay home with their children?
This is what
that would be a very simple one.
That would be a good thing too. This idea that we used to have in our society by allowing women, to work and making society possible where women could when they can and if they wanted to, but at the same and not discriminating against them because they're women, but at the same time make it much easier for women to stay home and choose to be a homemaker. there's been a war by feminists against the women who are homemakers, one of the most important jobs any cultural society can have, and yet it's been attacked. So that's another thing the pro-life movement can do. It can encourage programs wherever it can that allow women, you know, to stay home. By, again, that could be done through tax policies, and it could be done by, in a sense, hiring men who have families and are acting responsibly so that their the mothers can stay home if they choose. This would allow more men into the market that are married. And we could also work to provide a wage that would be enough to cover a family like it used to. At one time, women could stay home, and the husband, could, even among the poor and the middle class, the husband could earn enough money to support the entire family. We need to start focusing on how we could do that and how we could do that in some kind of non-bureaucratic way. Again, tax policy could be a wonderful thing there. Tax the employers less that make, you know, give them a tax break for making a longer leave available and so forth. There's so many things. And we have to remember, the pro-life movement has to remember, it has to do these things responsibly. But these are some of the things the pro-life movement can do. We just didn't get into all of them. There's so much here. Maybe we can talk about a few more of those next week. We can list and talk about, without reading an article, just list and talk about some of the things that could be done in a responsible way to actually lessen bureaucracy, lessen government costs, and make it possible for people to keep more money in their own pockets and be able to raise a family without all of the costs and expenses that are going on today. So we'll talk about that next week. In the meantime, we'll have to close the program. So Saint Michael, the Archangel, defend us in battle. Be our protection against the wickedness and snares of the devil. May God rebuke him, we humbly pray. And do thou, Prince of the heavenly host, by the power of God, thrust into hell Satan and all evil persons who wander through the world for the ruin of souls. Amen.
You've been listening to Being Catholic with Bob Johnston on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5. If you'd like to contact Bob, email bob@catholicspiritradio.com. Again, that's bob@catholicspiritradio.com. Catholic Spirit Radio relies on your support to bring programming like this and EWTN to Central Illinois 24 hours a day. Please help keep Catholic Spirit Radio on the air with your generous support. Donate online at catholicspiritradio.com. Or send a donation to Catholic Spirit Radio, 108 Boykins Place, Normal, Illinois, 61761. That's Catholic Spirit Radio, 108 Boykins Place, Normal, Illinois, 61761. Catholic Spirit Radio is a 501c3, and all donations are tax deductible. Thank you for your support of Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5.